This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. For the first time ever, the FDA has approved a drug designed to treat something called female sexual dysfunction. Raleigh-based pharmaceutical company Sprout raised $100 million in private funding to develop the libido pill called Addy. This morning, Valeant Pharmaceuticals announced that it is buying Sprout for $1 billion. The FDA approval comes after a coalition of organizations and companies, including Sprout, launched a campaign called Even the Score. The movement framed the question of FDA approval as one of gender equality. But opponents, including several women's groups, say the risky side effects of the drug outweigh the benefits. Triangle Business Journal reporter Jason DeBruin joins me now. Welcome back, Jason.
Frank, hi. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Kind of a stop the presses moment for the Triangle Business Journal.
Yeah, absolutely it is. It's kind of funny. This literally was a stop the presses moment for us. We had to pull back the paper so that we could add this story into it. You mentioned a $1 billion sale of a small local company to a big multinational conglomerate. Just sort of baseline, this isn't that out of the ordinary. Companies, small drug developers, when they have a drug approved, oftentimes they try to become acquired by a larger company. Just whenever you hear the number $1 billion, it's a little eye popping.
It's a lot of money. So they bought Sprout is the Raleigh-based company. Tell us about the drug itself and the target market.
So the drug, as you mentioned, is called Addy, and it treats hypoactive sexual desire disorder, HSDD. This is something that has sort of gotten a lot of attention here in the past week or so. The FDA just approved the drug just 2 days ago. So literally on Tuesday, they just approved it. And this is this is the first ever drug that has been approved to treat any sexual disorders in women. There are 26 approved drugs, starting with Viagra through Cialis, 26 drugs approved to treat male sexual disorders, but none, or now one, to treat female disorders.
How many women are affected by this?
So it's sort of tough to estimate. The top-line estimate of women that suffer from some sort of low sexual desire is about 16 million. To put that in perspective, that's about one-third as many women as suffer from heart disease, and about half as many as suffer from diabetes. So just to give you some perspective there. What gets a little tougher is that doesn't necessarily mean that the market for this drug is immediately going to be 16 million people, right? I mean, it's some smaller fraction of that number. What that is, we're not entirely sure, but it's certainly a decent-sized market that they're entering into.
And what is the target market then? Because this is for premenopausal women, right?
That's an important distinction that you just pointed out. It is approved only for premenopausal women. Now, as you're obviously aware, doctors may prescribe drugs, what's called, quote, off-label. But yes, the FDA has approved this only for treating sexual disorders in premenopausal women. So the target audience is, right sort of in that 30 to 40 to 45 year age range, likely women who are married and are maybe unsatisfied with their sex lives.
Approval comes with a black box warning. Now, what does that mean?
That is the most stern warning that the FDA can give to any drug that it approves. And basically what it means is that there's going to be a pretty stern warning on the actual box of Addy. You can probably picture the Surgeon General warning that's on cigarette boxes. Mm. It'll be something similar. It will have come with a big warning and said that there are some pretty serious side effects that come along with this drug.
And what are the side effects?
Two that are probably the most prevalent are women are in danger of passing out and are in danger of having low blood pressure. So unconsciousness and low blood pressure are the two most common side effects, which are exacerbated when drinking alcohol. So women who speak to their doctors about having this drug or being prescribed this drug will be recommended to not drink alcohol. And why that's interesting is, let's just take Viagra, for example. It's not a great comparison because they do different things, but let's just take Viagra, for example. That's just sort of a one-time shot. You take the pill, and then that's it. But this drug, you're supposed to take every night forever. So, you just take it every night per week, per month or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so the point being that there's a bit of a concern that women are not going to just simply stop drinking alcohol, period. So there's going to be some sort of a combination of alcohol plus this drug.
And I think the warnings are: do not drink alcohol in excess with those men's drugs. And I don't know if that's in excess or at all with this drug.
The warning is to not drink at all. Certainly, the more you drink, the higher the risk.
So, talk a little bit more about and they do work differently. Obviously, most of the drugs for men are vascular drugs. They work on the vascular system and the male function. In this case, it's a neuro drug, right?
That's correct. And there again, that's why making the comparison to Viagra or Cialis isn't great, because as you mentioned, those increase blood flow to the genital area. This instead targets dopamine receptors and is something that is more along the desire side. And so it's the first drug ever approved to treat a sexual disorder in women, but it's actually the first drug approved ever to treat sexual desire in either men or women. As you said, the other 26 approved drugs target primarily the vascular system, target blood flow. This is something that's quite different.
So we know Sprout gets $1 billion for getting this drug to market. That's the potential, at least, that this Canadian firm believes is the potential for the drug. $100 million that Sprout raised to bring it to market. Talk about that fundraising, because that was unique as well, right?
Quite unique, absolutely. Your listeners will probably be somewhat aware of drug development being here in the Research Triangle Park area. We have a lot of small drug developers. Typically, what happens is a researcher or a scientist might have an idea for some sort of a drug that might treat some disease sometime down the road. They raise some small amount of money from some private investors on the order of hundreds of thousands, maybe a million or two, not a lot of money. At that point, then institutional investors, venture capital groups, potentially larger pharmaceutical companies, they come in with the bigger checks, the tens of millions of dollars, to sort of bring this drug through future development and large-scale testing. What's interesting about Sprout is that they raised that $100 million all from private investors. So literally, they have not disclosed a single one of the investors. We don't know any of them, and they have all been proudly private. And, more power to them. That's totally fair. I'm not saying anything nefarious is going on, but it is unique that this money was raised all from private investors. These are high net worth individuals that believed in this company and believed in this drug.
A unique fundraising campaign and a unique marketing campaign in advance of its approval. Talk about that, because that was somewhat still part of the controversy.
Oh, absolutely. And this is where critics will jump in again. This drug has actually been turned down by the FDA twice previously. We talked about the side effects. They are serious. We talked about, what it does. But the effects shown in clinical trials, critics say that they're actually not that great. Women in the clinical trials reported having no more than one additional pleasurable sexual experience per month. And critics say that the risks don't outweigh the benefits. Well, then you had even the SCORE group that you talked about in your opening, and they had a pretty strong political push at the FDA, lobbying the people that, end up deciding on this drug, and kept pointing out that, hey, the score is 26 to nothing, hence the name Even the Score, of course, and were making very serious allegations of the FDA being a sexist organization because there are so many drugs approved for men and none for women. And we should note, Viagra, Cialis, these other drugs also come with pretty serious side effects. And so the point being, hey, we allow men to make an adult decision about what their risk profile is. We should also allow that for women. But there was that heavy push by groups like Even the Score, so this became a little bit more politicized maybe than some other drug approvals in the past.
How common is it to mount a lobbying campaign in support of your drug, bringing it to market?
So it's not uncommon to lobby for your drug, right? I mean, you've invested hundreds of millions of dollars. What is a little uncommon is to have it be this big. Certainly drug companies will try to influence the FDA to approve their drug. That's no surprise, but it is a little bit uncommon to see one that received this much attention.
Sprout is also controversial because the FDA issued a warning letter in the past, right? Tell us about that.
Right. So the CEO of Sprout is a woman named Cindy Whitehead. She and her husband are sort of running this company. They used to run a company called Slate Pharmaceuticals, and that company marketed a testosterone drug. Well, at one point in 2010, they received a warning letter from FDA. And now, a warning letter is very serious. This is one of the most serious things that the FDA can send to a company. And what the FDA said is that in their marketing materials, both on TV and in radio advertising, they were overstating the drug's effects while downplaying the drug's side effects. And they were told, you have to clean this up or you'll be in big trouble. So, of course, they did. But the concern from critics is that here again, particularly on a drug where critics say the benefits aren't that great and the side effects are pretty serious, the fear is that there will be some sort of a similar, potentially, you know, up against the line marketing effort to downplay the benefits while to play up the benefits right. while downplaying the side effects. We don't know that, of course. I mean, the drug was just approved, but that's the fear of critics.
All right. And so it's out of their hands now, and this drug is in the hands of a new owner. When do we expect it to go to market?
October 17 is the target date, so pretty quickly. That in the drug development world, that is a pretty fast timeline from approval to bringing a drug to market. You know, obviously they have to start making it and getting it out to doctors, so there's just, you know, simple shipping that frankly takes time. So October 17, it should be ready. In terms of marketing, what they have said is that they don't intend to do a broad-based television, radio, magazine advertising campaign like you might see. You know, if you watch football, you see a Viagra commercial every other advertising, right? So they're planning to not do that right out of the gate, but instead sort of educate doctors and tell them the benefits and sort of get them to maybe start the conversation with their female patients to educate them about it.
And doctors and pharmacists are going to have to be certified.
Another important point, maybe we should have mentioned this in the warning when we were talking about the warnings, that yes, in fact, if you're a doctor and you want to prescribe this, you have to become specially certified by the FDA. In addition to that, if you are a pharmacy that wants to carry this drug, your dispensing pharmacist also has to be specially certified. Now, certification, it's not like you have to go through a year-long program, but you do have to, you know, watch a slide deck and then prove to FDA that you have, in fact, understood all the risk factors that are associated with this drug.
All right. Jason, as always, a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Jason DeBruin, a reporter with the Triangle Business Journal. Just ahead, a pediatric oncologist turned author tells us about his debut novel. You'll hear it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.